The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
This episode is brought to you by Rockstar Energy Drink. Be honest, are you procrastinating by listening to this podcast? It's okay. You just need Rockstar Focus. Choose from three delicious flavors, each crafted with ingredients for an ideal energy and mental boost, like Lion's Mane, 200 milligrams of caffeine, and zero sugar. Visit rockstarenergy.com to learn more. At least 75 milligrams of caffeine has been shown to help improve attention.
This episode is brought to you by Azo. Ever felt off balance down there? Introducing Azo Vaginal Health Products. Azo Complete Feminine Balance helps restore the balance of good bacteria. And if you want protection from yeast and urinary tract issues, try Azo Dual Protection. Save 20% with the promo code PODCAST at azoproducts.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello and welcome to Tuesday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am Craig Fowler and I'm joined on this occasion by Duncan Mackay.
Hello.
And Craig Anderson.
Hello.
Very excitable. It's a crossover episode, Edinburgh Glasgow merging into one.
We're just like mixing it up.
Because there's no rivalry here, because we're here to combine forces and
can we do it into each other's arms. I was going
to
say that this Edinburgh Glasgow rivalry thing, though, is a weird one because only Glaswegians care about what Edinburgh, like, about the Edinburgh thing, as far as I'm concerned. Like, Edinburgh people are not really that fussed what Glaswegians think of them. It would be my opinion.
Yes, I would agree with that. But then I'm also from Edinburgh.
Yeah. I'm not Glaswegian, so I'm. And I technically don't live in Glasgow City Council either, so fuck them. So, yeah, whatever. I lived in Edinburgh for a long time, lovely place, so yeah, go for it. Grand. Fuck Glasgow.
Yeah. Yes. Well, there's a moment of unity.
That's the name of the episode.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Can we just maybe talk about this for the next half hour and not talk about what a shitey national team we have?
Yeah, it's fair to say that confidence has not been raised at all.
The wheels have come off the Steve Clarke bandwagon.
Yes. After like four games, the honeymoon period did not last long.
No, I mean, admittedly. Four games that you would not really, well, Cyprus at home,
and that was super convincing.
Yeah, and that was super. And then two teams against arguably the best side in the world, and
World Cup quarterfinalist
definitely have suspiciously good blood transfusion services.
Come did get a corner. Yeah, I mean, like, so. They did get to a World Cup quarterfinal
in their home country, though.
But in their home country, the home countries tend to do a bit better than. You're just clapping there.
Yeah, I was just clapping.
They tend to do better than, like, South Korea, for example.
Yes.
And America, when they've qualified for their group in '94, when they weren't expected to, and South Africa winning a game.
Well, that's what we need to do then, host the fucking thing.
It's a little bit qualifying. Right, let's get to...
Oh, we're hosting this one and we're probably still not going to qualify, so that's...
Right, let's start with the Russia game on Friday. So, take it all the way back. Team, first of all, was there any kind of dissent at the start of the starting 11, or were you fairly happy with that?
There wasn't, so I went to the game and I went with Graham and Craig Telford, and before the game, the only kind of discussion, we looked at the team and thought, that's all right. I would have picked Ryan Christie. I think he's by far the best midfielder we have, in my opinion. So I was a bit disappointed he wasn't playing, but I wasn't like, oh, this is a terrible team selection. It was fine. It was kind of what you would roughly put down on paper as a decent Scotland team. It doesn't mean all the players are good, but it's about the best we had available.
And it didn't start too badly.
No, I mean, according to Roberto Martinez, it's the best 15 minutes of Scotland they've seen in decades.
I've no idea.
That is the damning. The thing is, there's parts like that is damning with faint praise because it's just 15 minutes and football largely lasts 90. And also, it actually could very much be true because Robert Martinez does strike me as a weirdo who has watched every single international football game that ever existed.
His wife is Scottish, so
yeah. Probably... Well, and he said that he's talked about that is that his sofa is set up. They've got two TVs. And so they spend time on like an L-shaped sofa that so allows him to watch a game of football and her to watch whatever she wants, and but them still to be together. I mean, that sounds weird.
Yeah, I'd do that if I had enough money. I'd do that anyway with the iPad and the telly.
Yeah, okay.
If I had a big enough house, and presumably if I'm national team Belgium manager, I do have enough money for a house with a wall big enough to easily fit two TVs and a couch big enough to suit us as well. I'm with Martinez.
Okay. But
this is using your money well.
Yes.
But you know, I thought that they start... How do I link this?
There's no linkage.
The start was good. Even before the goal, like, we came out of the traps flying. I think I said... Someone asked in the group chat what we thought the score was going to be, and I said I fancied this, and I thought we were going to do a kind of Ukraine 2007 type thing where we just absolutely battered them and we were 2-0 up in like 10 minutes, and I just had a feeling about that game. And yeah, we came out, we were flying, it was a wide open game, so they had a couple of half chances as well, and then we did get the goal, and it was the goalkeeper was howling. I thought he was pretty poor all the way through the game. Because he kind of flapped that to McGinn, and it was a nice finish. And at that point, as when Steve Clarke was Kelly manager, when we went 1-0 up,
game's over.
Very rarely did we not win a game. And so I was expecting him to shut up shop and kind of tighten it up, but we didn't for about 10 minutes. We were too wide open, and then it was almost as if he got spooked by that and then just went too far in the opposite direction, because then Russia just battered us for the remainder of the game until the last 10.
Yeah, I think it didn't help at all that McBurney and McGinn started the game pretty well.
And then faded badly.
Really saw either of them for the rest of the match. In fact, McGinn became so anonymous, I didn't even realise when he was taken off.
Ollie McBurney is a very strange player, because all he ever wants to do is flick the ball around the corner. And I remember Costa Rica, he made his debut, started up front, and I was watching him, and I'm like, you're alright. Like, every time he would get the ball into his body, and he would look, and he would be either flicking it round to the right, round to the left, laying it off, I'm like, oh, this is what you want. And then I realised, he literally never holds the ball. Literally never. He always wants to just take one touch, and I'm like, you have to be unpredictable. You have to sometimes hold it. And okay, the one time he nearly did hold it, the Russian boy absolutely battered through the back of him. And he seemed to just bottle it from that point on. I had more than a degree of sympathy for him the other night, actually, I thought, because he was so isolated.
Yeah.
Forrest and Fraser were both hopeless. They never got near him the whole game. That was their job. McGregor, yet to have a good game for Scotland, got nowhere near him. And those are the three players that are in the team to do that. And we did notice... when Christie came on later on into the game, he was making those runs between the two.
Mm-hmm.
McBurney had just gone by then, though. His head was just away. Like, he just because someone paid £20 million for him didn't suddenly magically make him actually...
£20 million.
he might be okay, but as of yet, we have evidence of him scoring lots of goals in the English Championship. Well, so did Jason Scotland. So did Clayton Donaldson. Just because someone's paid £20 million doesn't mean yet that he's there. And maybe he's just been misused by Scotland. It's possible. But what we've seen so far from Ollie McBurney, while he was isolated, while he was there, he doesn't do enough to drag himself into the game. If you think of Kenny Miller playing up front, a substantially inferior player in terms of goal record and all that, there's no way Kenny Miller would have stayed out of a game for that long.
No.
He might have scored, but he would have...
Yeah, so then... So, yeah, Scotland started to get a bit deeper. I still thought about... when did Russia equalise? About 5 minutes before half-time?
Yeah.
I still thought around about the half-hour mark. I was thinking, Scotland's still fairly in control of this. I'm thinking, right, this campaign isn't over yet. They win this game. And then I'm thinking, we could get a draw against this lot in Russia. And then within 10 minutes, I was thinking, God, please just hold out for a draw.
We couldn't cope with them. We couldn't cope with Jubia at all.
Yeah, now, he was really good. he was doing it last night.
He was doing it at the World Cup as well. He was a handful for everyone. I mean, Spain, Piqué, I think it was Piqué and Ramos, at least half of Spain struggled to deal with him. he's ludicrous. He's an absolutely ludicrous player. And what I was saying at the game, he's actually very clean. He doesn't elbow. He doesn't like. He's just so huge. And I mean, that's not a natural body shape. And we can make a lot of jokes about it, but we are being a bit unlucky in that we are a team of midgets and we're playing against the two. If I was to pick the two national teams in the world who are most likely to be dopers, and you can chuck in those two in Wales. If I'm allowed to say that, I'm not saying they were. I'm not saying they are. I'm saying if we were to rank them on a list of who have been most probable, I would put them in those two in Wales very high on the list, and I would put Scotland very, very, very near the bottom when you look at our players. Because if that's what a doped team looked like, then God knows what we would look like without it. So we were just off the pace physically. Especially against him, but even the rest of them, Golovin was very good and very quick and strong as well. Ultimately, they're a much better team than us, and we didn't compete the way we should.
Yeah, and I think from this point, the thing is, this is probably the best set of players we've had in quite a few years. And you can probably make the argument of the level of play and stuff like that, but they're just not performing in the way that they perform, in the way that they get. I mean, I'm sure we'll get on to Andy Robertson, but I think that's a different thing. But okay, right. Dreadful. both games absolutely dreadful. And I totally get that he cannot be expected to play for Scotland the way that he plays for Liverpool. But if he played like that, if any of his positioning or anything like that was in a Liverpool, he'd have been gone. He stopped doing the very basics. Shutting down space.
You'd just be happy if he played like he did when he played for Hull.
It's. You start to think maybe Strachan was right to be picking Craig Forsyth ahead of him. But the thing with Robertson is, like, he does the captain stuff very well on the pitch in terms of, see, when we were chasing the game, he's running to get the ball for throw-ins. He's showing all that. It's not a lack of wanting to be there.
No.
And he's you know, over-committing himself, which when you're 2-1 down and 5 minutes to go, whatever, play centre-forward if you want, that's fine. But, yeah, in terms of actually what he is as a left-back,
It's not good enough at the moment.
You can go across that back line, and if you look at the three players who are playing alongside him, well, Liam Cooper, who was making his debut, both games he was not great, but he's never played for Scotland before. He's a Championship bog standard centre half. You don't expect much from him. Mulgrew has experience. I really like Charlie Mulgrew. I think in terms of kind of culture and all that, and for what you want from a centre half. Again, he's not great. We know he's not great. And then O'Donnell, I mean,
we love him.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not his fault. It's not his fault. He keeps getting picked.
He's had 11 caps
for
Scotland.
That's fucking mental, by the way.
But you watch him play for Killy, and he's a good right back. Yeah. But what he's not a defender. He's not defensively. He was defensively okay in a rigid unit with Clark and it's the same manager. But you know what I mean.
Different levels of opposition
and stuff, but. We know he's not good enough. Nobody's trying. We've not ever went, oh, Stephen O'Donnell, that's who we want on the opposite flank. Right, like, he plays with Robertson and Alexander-Arnold for Liverpool, and it's Robertson and O'Donnell for Scotland. Pretty much the same. But fundamentally remains, there isn't some other magic option out there. Even Palmer, who was the one that McLeish tried instead, was also shit, but he might be worth a go again. He was injured, he wasn't in the squad, so...
Callum Patterson was
not a right back. Yeah.
And then you're looking at Ryan Jack, who hasn't played there in 5 or 6 years. I did wonder if he was going to start the other night, but I mean, is he actually going to be any better of a right back than Stephen O'Donnell?
Probably not.
In the middle of the park, there's an argument he could have been playing because he would not have. I was going to say he wouldn't have allowed that to happen, but then he got absolutely bodied by Celtic the weekend before, having had a good start to the season. So you're looking at that and you're going, okay. At the very least, Andy Robertson, just be a left back, just be the one competent defender that the team can hang their hat on. And he wasn't.
It wasn't even that.
McTominay, I like him. I can't decide if he's good, bad, or not. But the thing I really like is
just a good sign for an international.
But the one thing I always notice with him is how much he zips pace into his passes, and I like that because that's what you want. Mm-hmm. That's as much as I can say for him. McGinn, McGinn's barely kicked the ball for Scotland. likewise McGregor. So, yeah, looking through that team, David Marshall thought was excellent against Russia. Last night he was fine and what to do, but he didn't have anything amazing that you thought that's
didn't
incredible.
Really have much put right
but
he
made two really important saves against Russia at the time that you thought this could keep us in the game. So I feel sorry for him. But you're looking through that and you're thinking, where is the? You look at that left hand side of the Scotland team. You've got Robertson, Champions League winner. You've got Ryan Fraser, all those assists in English Premier League and stuff.
John McGinn reportedly worth $50 million.
Yeah, McBurney, £20 million striker. Forrest, who has been tremendous for Celtic for years, and would probably fetch $15 million at least if someone bought him.
Yeah.
McGregor, likewise, you would be talking about for a fee. They're not doing it, and it's not just like it's Steve Clarke hasn't got it out of them. McLeish certainly didn't.
Strachan at points, but not. I mean, I think that was.
He didn't pick McGregor.
And that's like Ian Crocker. But Ian Crocker last night was saying, that people, in this idea of, people talk about being typically Scottish to go out and beat Belgium. And he was like, and the point he was making is like, Scotland haven't beaten anyone that they shouldn't have beaten. Like,
Was Croatia. Last time Scotland done that kind of result like that?
It was Croatia. And even then, they were on a dip. So then you're going back to France?
Yeah, probably.
That's fucking ages ago. Like, that is so long ago.
And that's fine if you always beat the teams you're expected to
beat.
Yeah,
but we don't. We go to Kazakhstan and lose. We go to Georgia and we don't win.
It's very hard. I think what you realise is, and we did say this at the time, and I think people took it for granted, regardless of whether the decision to get rid of him or not was right, Strachan, the run of form we had at the end under Strachan was sensational. We were unbeaten in 6 competitive matches. We had the draw with England. We went on the run of wins, and obviously it didn't quite come together, but it was still a draw away to Slovenia. It wasn't like...
That's what we said about the Strachan decision, was that I really dislike Strachan and wanted him gone earlier. But when they didn't sack him and they kept him on, and then they went on that run, and then they sacked him after that, it was like, so what were you looking for, really? Yeah. Because they could scarcely have done any more. The only thing more they could have done was held out against England, and that would have potentially
changed everything.
Or we had the shot header cleared off the line in the last minute against Slovenia, which would have been a robbery because we were hopeless in that game, but we would have gone in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, it's not to say that Clark cannot get the same out of the team, because I think he can. I think we've seen that not just at Killy. I mean, West Brom, he took them to 7th or something. Yeah, so it's not like it's a one-off. Like, he has managed well at a good level. But the players' confidence, McLeish did more than just kind of do badly on the results front. He wrecked the confidence of a bunch of players because he, Alexis Snodgrass, he seemed to just bin off. Marshall was the same. The good players, they were playing, they were very wide open in every game, and that was kind of part of the problem. It was exposing a lot of inexperienced players, and we expected Clark to shut up and tighten up, and it looked like he did in the Cyprus game and then out in Belgium. In terms of a tactical performance for Scotland, you're looking at that and thinking that's kind of like how his Killy team played. It's like it was organised, and okay, we got scudded off a better team, but there wasn't a sense of that.
There was at least signs for optimism.
There was none of that in either game. As soon as Russia kind of started running over the top of us, it was like we didn't have an idea, and it was like, so he takes a lot of the blame for that. I think we can't step away from that, because he's chopped and changed a bit too much for my liking, certainly.
Aside from the defence.
The defence was the same, and McTominay was there, but you have to just settle on players. I mean, Kenny McLean I thought was excellent in the Belgium away game.
He was superb.
He was shit last night, and
Snodgrass, I just didn't see why you would play Robert Snodgrass in that game.
No, he'd have been better for the Russia game, because he's kind of a wee bit of a creative player, whereas you're getting more graft out of Forrest in terms of tracking back to cover
Yeah, Comfort
O'Donnell, which is needed.
Can we never start Phillips again? Up front?
I thought his cameo performance on Friday night was his bad a performance that I've seen from a Scotland player in ever.
It was bad every time
the ball came near him. It was like it bounced 90 yards away from him. What does he bring?
But he doesn't play up front. This is the madness, is he doesn't play up front for his club either. What are we doing?
We've kind of moved on already. Yeah. So the Belgium team, what did you think of the starting lineup for that game?
I mean, great bringing Christian. I thought Christian was the one bright spark on, just despite what some troll suggested to me on social media the other night when I said so. I thought Christy was the best, brightest spark from the Russia game, because when he came on, he drove with the ball, he looked for the ball, he tried to make things happen. That's all we need. We don't need to even be brilliant, which I think he is. I think he's not long for Celtic, would be my guess, but I was pleased to see him in. McLean, I felt, deserved another go because of how he played in Belgium. I think we can probably cut our losses on him now.
It turns out that being a wacky character, that when promotion lasts as long as until you stop fucking marking in the penalty box.
Forrest and Fraser, for me, regardless of having not played well, just persist with them. Keep playing them, because if you're looking at how are Scotland going to win games, well, it's with the wide areas where we have good players who can actually hurt teams. Both of them can. Just keep picking them. So I think Snodgrass was, he obviously wanted to give Snodgrass a go.
I didn't
disagree with him being used at some point, but
it's quite an impressive 8 minutes though. I mean, McLeish would have been coming out afterwards and saying that was a very good start.
It was so, and that's they started with the right attitude. They started on the front foot. You're taking the game to Belgium in the sense that you're saying, look, we're not just here to sit back, because you sit back and defend against them, you'll lose, as we saw in Brussels. So we're saying, look, okay, you're better than us, we know that, but we will go toe to toe with you as much as you can. The goals, in fact, all three of the goals we conceded in the first half are just unforgivable. Belgium didn't cut us open by playing through it. Well, I mean, they did for the first goal, but how can you possibly concede that goal at 0-0 after 10 minutes?
It's naive. It's not even naive, because it's negligent. It's negligent defending.
Someone in that team has to have not meant to have been in the box there.
You would have thought so.
Because you cannot leave.
You cannot have like one player beat.
O'Donnell was on the edge.
And then we had Robertson. Robertson was the one who was like
anchor all the way
back. There needs to be another player, because there were three Belgians.
It was Christy who couldn't get back in time. He's like sprinting the length of the pitch to try and get over.
But Christy's an attacking player who you want in the attacking positions. I guess the problem is, and I think that's just the reason, McTominay is big, so you want him in the box for a header. Yes. Both the centre halves are aerial threats.
Big. Even O'Donnell's
fairly big, so you want him about there, because he's an aerial target. And then you're like, well, that's a lot of your defensive players.
So you might need
either Fraser or Forrest.
Rewinding to
I can't even remember.
If that's the case, like if you're putting that much of stock in set pieces, they need to be better than they were on Friday night for certain. Because every time it was a corner, it were dreadful. They were just floated. It didn't seem like there was a plan for set pieces for attacking.
You don't really have a great set piece taker. That's another maybe issue as well. McGregor's not that good at them. Celtic fans will tell you.
Charlie Mulgrew is an excellent set piece taker. I don't care if he's a centre half, just put him on them.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you saw his free kick against Russia the other night. We were sitting side on. It looked like it was pretty close near the end. The problem is he's also probably our biggest chance of scoring a header. So it's like that Bugs Bunny character. You want him to be crossing the corner in for himself, but you can learn how to take a corner. You can learn how to take the corner in the space of an international training camp, let alone a professional footballer with a career doing it. Like, there's no excuses for that. But that goal to concede, and then the second one, like, why is it? It's like, how can you give them free headers in the box? Like,
I think when it's goals that soft, like that is the reason why you're only getting 25,000 people turning up for these games. Like, with the best will in the world, like you, even like it's just so frustrating to talk about, because I feel like the 5 years I've been doing this podcast, like, it's kind of the same conversations over and over again. Like, it's like, we feel like we're on the cusp of something, but again, I don't mind being on the cusp of something and failing, but because of other things that other people are doing better than us, a lot of the time we're failing because we're deciding to cut our own feet off.
I think we are on the cusp of something right now. We've got a playoff.
At home against someone's shit as well.
We're not winning that.
But I think I've seen a couple of people make a good point that we're constantly chopping and changing the players, and that needs to stop.
Yeah.
Why do we, like, Scott McKenna, I know he was injured, Scott McKenna's not very good, but he's a young centre-half. Just keep picking him. And the same with, even if it's McGinn, I don't think McGinn's been great for Scotland, but again, he's a fairly young player.
If you're going to play him number eight, just pick him over and over again,
and by the time he has 70 caps, surely, like, they've got some semblance. And it's the point is, if someone said, if Robert Snodgrass, if Kenny McLean was Northern Irish, they would already have 50 caps, because they're better than what's in their team. Even O'Donnell is better than, I was looking at who they had at right back. They don't even have a right back.
Until a couple of seasons ago, it was Lee Hodgson.
Yeah,
like, you know, like you cannot tell me that pound for pound, player for player, Northern Ireland are better.
Connor Washington starting for the
Rangers. I know, you missed that, Mr. Sir.
I mean, okay, they're also not going to qualify, so it's like a bad comparison. But
they've qualified for something recently and got out of the group.
With more coherent than Scotland at the moment.
And the point is,
we should go after their manager. That's what we should do.
Someone did point out O'Neill went something ridiculous, like 17 games.
Yeah, it took Coleman a while as well to get Wolves. It was obviously the blood doping taking a while to kick in.
So that's that. Sense.
There's no point. This whole thing that people are just like, oh, we'll just get rid of it. Like, who? What? Like, you've again. It's like Scotland, when the way they played, it was a bit like the Mike Tyson quote: "Everyone's got a plan until they're punched in the face." And that's the same with Scotland. The natural reaction of people is be like, "Oh, we just need to get rid of it. We need to start again." It's like, start again with what? Like, that's like, stop. Like,
not, you know, almost like, none of that team have won any caps in the first place. That's why someone like Mulgrew is still there, because, well, you can't, as we saw in Kazakhstan, you cannot pick a team with literally no experience. Like, that team that started in Kazakhstan.
Like Ryan Fraser's only had like 12 caps, I think.
He keeps calling off.
Yeah, he's a...
But, you know, and another thing is we are having success at under 17, under 19 level, even under 21s, that's where it starts to fade. That we do have players of calibre.
We do. But
this is probably the best squad on paper we've had.
I saw it. Somebody said we should call up Billy Gilmore today. Can't remember who it was.
Why? Because he started one game for Chelsea.
Why would you do that to him as well?
To be fair,
I mean, if he's continues to play it, have him in the heart.
To be fair, the Wales have been picking that, and okay, he's a big, massive boy again, interestingly. Ampadu, who was at Chelsea and is now in loan at Leipzig or something, but he's been playing for Wales despite not necessarily the first team. There's no point in doing that type of thing for any old junk, but Gilmore, you can at least see he's like a generational talent for Scotland. Like the fact that he's already played for Chelsea at the age of 18, a team that's notoriously difficult.
This is how it's
done. It's not that, but it's like, okay,
we're already looking forward to him being rubbish for Scotland. Yeah.
But at least you're like, well, he's got something where you're like,
hashtag respect our players.
he's worth like having a look at. Yeah. And I'm not saying, the problem is, again, if he was a right back, he'd already play. If he was a centre forward, he'd already have about 50 caps, but he's not. But even in his position, it's not like, would they offer any less than Kenny McLean? I really like watching McLean as a player. He's got a lovely left foot. He spreads the pass really well.
It's less than bugger all.
but what's he? He's 28 years old. He's not had many Scotland caps for a reason.
Yeah.
Just Cut losses with certain players.
Pick a core, but see, there's just a lot of play. Why is Johnny Russell still there? I mean, fuck's sake. He was barely good enough at his peak.
Yeah.
And now he's travelling, what?
Yeah, fair play.
I mean, amazing effort, but like, what is the point? The 8,000 miles round trip or whatever, like, you know, it's just like, to come on for 13 minutes in a game that's already gone.
Has he ever done anything for Scotland?
He's always looked committed. But I mean, that's that's damning with faint praise.
That's what Sean always says. People say they like players because they run around a lot.
That's enough for some people, though. Like that's where we've got to.
Just leave your core of players there. Like, you look at the ones that are either all right or young enough.
Yeah. The
ones that have got the right attitude, and I don't mean that attitude run a bit. I mean ones that you look at them and you're like, well, he thinks about the game properly. He's got some modicum of football intelligence and he knows what he's doing. Not Matt Phillips, essentially, where you're just like, what are you?
Joe wrote an article where he said that Scotland should kind of come up with an identity based on how football is played in Scotland. Kind of in your face, very fast-paced, very physical.
Yep.
I'm kind of all for that, but it's not exactly something we seem to be able to do at the national team at present, because I wouldn't mind building a team that looks like that as well, but a team that looked like that would be devoid of much talent.
Well, who have you got? We're not blessed with big players, and that's it. If you look at Steve Clarke and you think, well, I would say Clarke's Kelly team in some ways typified that, certainly in the big games. So they were hard running, they were organised, they got in people's faces, they were quite aggressive, and they didn't have a lot of creativity, and that's probably what you say about Scotland.
Move the games to Tynecastle.
But
here we go.
Who's he picking at that point? I mean, if he tries to emulate his Kelly team, well, okay, he's got the back four if he wants it.
you're pinching on a Patreon. Oh, yeah.
But if you've got Ryan Jackets, he's Alan Power. Who's his Gary Dicker? McTominay. I mean, again, it's all relative. Yeah. And then you're just like, that's not that.
So then something that we need to foster from a younger age. Like, say, right, scrap all this. Right, all these passing triangles.
Just what?
get running.
Just a school of hard knocks. A Project Brave school of hard knocks.
Literally Project Brave.
Yeah. Brave on the ball, you fucking Jesse.
Right,
Colts teams would solve this, surely.
Of course, bringing back reserve football. Everything's got much better.
It's because we're a country of middle class.
Right, that's actually what I was going to bring on to the next point. The big talking point today is what Chris Boyd said after the game, where it was kind of almost like a call to arms.
It's almost like someone had said, oh, what you should definitely do is, this game's going shit, maybe think up a rant that could maybe be clipped up for social media, and that would look really good. I don't know, that's a cynic in me. But
so what do you think? Can I just point out,
Willie Miller's got a lot braver about the performance of Scotland manager since it's not his pals that are doing the job.
I can remember who he worked for.
I can criticise Willie Miller as an absolutely fucking atrocious pundit, can't I?
I'd rather you Right, so what do you think about Boyd's comments? Because a lot of people seem
to agree. A lot of people like public executions. It doesn't necessarily mean they're a great idea. Like,
there's a modicum of, I don't agree with them generally, but I think there's like a grain of something in there. In general, kids don't play outside as much. Even, I wasn't a particularly active, I would play football every now and then. Folk played out.
There's not an athletic culture in Scotland. There's people that play for a sport, but there's not the same. If you go to Germany, or you go to, you know, obviously everyone talks about that, or you go to Holland or Iceland, there's sporting clubs and societies that you're members of that is essentially your local leisure centre and things like that. There just isn't that, just doesn't exist here. The boys' club set up and school football set up, like, we're still, if you listen to some, we're still dealing with the legacies of a 1970s teacher strike on the influence that had on PE. Like, if you listen to some people.
So these things all get packaged up, and it's like, I think it's fair to say that kids don't play or disorganised running about football in the streets.
But they probably don't in Belgium.
How much does going out and playing the odd game of running about shit football in the street with your pals really help you as a professional athlete is my question. Is it actually any more conducive to being a good professional athlete than what kids do, which is actually have training with proper coaches and qualified people? What it might do is I think it adds a bit of bravery, and maybe there's a bit of gallus and a bit of a kind of attitude, which I think is one thing that I think there's a massive
lack of personality
attitude,
in that squad,
attitude issue with that squad. Yeah.
There's
players, so say a Callum McGregor or Jane Forrest type players, right? There's nothing wrong with those types of attitudes. They're kind of quiet guys. They are fairly unambitious. I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean they're not like striving to go and play at the top level. They're pretty happy playing for Celtic. Quite rarely, they're Celtic fans. It's a good place to play your football. I'm not criticising them for it, but they maybe lack a bit of ambition in their career. And that's okay in a team. The problem is you can't have too many of those players. You need the guys that are the spark.
Yeah, you need. There's not a lot of chippiness in that Scotland team. Like, you know, in terms of, like, not even like nastiness or, but just a
just anybody who gets under the skin of an opponent.
Scott Brown.
Scott Brown. Maybe.
And it's just all these wee things that they don't seem substantial, and you can talk about it being kind of just focus on your football. We're not good enough. We're never going to be good enough to win tournaments by just being better at football than other teams. We can be good at football, and that's our aim. But we do need to have all these little extra 10%. We need to have the atmosphere, so you can talk about whether the atmosphere at Hampden, the way it's generated at the moment, right? I don't think it is. I think there's the SFA have gradually not been taking the right approach in terms of how they promote atmosphere at the game. I mentioned this on Friday night, that it's starting to be like a family-friendly atmosphere, and there's nothing wrong with that, but the kids really actually want to... the kids actually want to go to football and have clowns and have Idlewild. And no, they want the noise and the atmosphere and the lights and the Scotland to win. And so at half time, when they're playing highlights of a 2-0 victory over San Marino in the under-21s, how is that getting the crowd going?
I know.
And that's a crucial qualifier where you're drawing one each at half time and you need to win. And I think back to 2007, it was the Lithuania game, it could have even been the Ukraine game. And okay, we're winning and all, but they had like the crowd doing a sing along to
Loch Lomond
or something like that. And it's like, the whole place was bouncing. See, when those teams came out for the second half, the place was bouncing. And that's... you need every one of these... Again, that's not enough to win you the game. Just having a great atmosphere is not enough to win the game. Just having a prick in the midfield is not enough to win you the game.
It's cumulative.
All of these things together, and we're not doing it. So what Chris Boyd talks about touches on that, in the sense that, yes, if we had players who were a bit more gallus, if we had players who... We're a bit more, I guess it's about adaptability, isn't it? It's about intelligence on the ball and adaptability, dealing with circumstances and dealing with adversity in any type of life.
It's not a particularly resilient team at the moment. But you can make an argument that we don't, we don't really have that in Scottish football at all. There isn't that many players that have...
Just look at bloody record in Europe.
Yeah. We don't have the big time mentality. Like, that's why Scott Brown has been at Celtic for, 12 years now? Like, you know, like, there's a reason for that. Like, that's someone who should have gone and tested themselves. Is what you're going back to the point with McGregor and...
But it also speaks to something else as well about having characters like that in the game, and that Scott Brown has kind of been like a giant of the domestic league for so long, whereas maybe in years past there would have been other guys kind of similar to him and their attitude towards the game, and they're not taking any shit kind of thing.
So, hey, and that's all about the class thing that gets touched upon. But there's a lot of stuff, I remember reading stuff before about, like, a lot of the England team just now are
very middle
class. And yet what you see from them is they have a different attitude. They're still pricks in general, but it's a different type of being a prick. It's like a self-belief, a Tory prick type, instead of like a sort of Neddy Labour prick. So we don't have either. We seem to be in the middle. It's like the SNP types. There is that sense, like, because there's something to be said. I think someone made the point that Kevin De Bruyne is not middle class, very middle class. And that
he's an old stuff robot about, as well. When you read any quotes by him, he's a proper robot. Like, he's like, I don't get fazed by atmosphere. I don't like the thing about the Tottenham standing, it doesn't make a difference to me because I'll still score goals and I'll still win.
And so that's like, there's been stuff about that, but how that type of player is more of a problem solver, and having a creative player, a problem solver. Brian Christie's probably, and I'm not comparing him to De Bruyne, but he's presumably fairly middle class, given his dad was a professional footballer. He's not going to
lives in the Highlands. Yeah,
he's not going to be raised in, you know, the tough streets or anything like that. And you can see that in his game. You can see that there's a different way of approaching the game. So yes, what Boyd says, there's probably some truth in that, but it's wrapped up in a massive steaming pile of cliched bullshit, which is what you get from most pundits most of the time, because they're like I'm doing now, they're being forced into an opinion.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't hold that
and
strongly.
And again, like you've got to think, we've said for a lot, that there's a false sense of where Scotland should be as an international football nation. The legacy, that obviously there's always going to be, I think, and we have an inbuilt advantage because we've been playing the game since 1872. Like, you know, and we've
that advantage isn't there anymore.
It's been rubbed away, I think that's what you can say now. But you know, we still have an influence of a nation of 5 million in terms of IFAB and stuff like that. It's not like those are not, they don't make a difference to tomorrow night to last night. But there is still that prestige. I think Scotland is still a potentially prestige fixture for fans for opposition to play against, because there's a history, because we still remarkably still have a overall winning record, and which not a lot of international nations have. It's going soon, but I think we've got 40 more wins than losses, I think.
I'll be done in 2 years.
But there is, I mean, in terms of the attitude of, like, say if we'd lost 4-0 to Spain last night, there would not have been nearly the same amount of inward looking, even though Belgium are the number one team in the world. Belgium, right? Yeah. Because it's, and we're always impressed by names in Scotland.
Yeah.
So you can be like, it's like, oh, we got beat off Russia. How can we lose to Russia? It's like, well, Russia are better than us. Of course, they're better than us.
they're underperforming for where they should be in terms of the nation aspect.
But Belgium are the world number ones for a reason, and they've got players that are way better. Even for us having saying, oh, we've got these Premier League level players, they've got players above that. They've got guys sitting in the bench who would be our best player, essentially. And again, had we lost, we still have said, if we lost 4-0 at home to Germany or Spain, we'd have been, oh, that's a shit result. There's no way we'd have had this much of a meltdown. And so then some senses, that's a bit unfair. And that kind of speaks to our deference as a culture. I think there's a fairly poorly written and kind of cliched university essay to be written about this, about how it all ties in with our kind of national psyche in relation to independence, in relation to everything else.
The Scottish cringe.
Yeah, I can imagine Stuart Cosgrove writing something along these lines as well about...
Is anyone from the VC don't
want to have a... I like Stuart Cosgrove. I was just saying he's the type of person who would write that kind of cultural... that cultural kind of article. But I think there's a lot to be said for that. There's an attitude issue, and you can talk about all this.
There's a fatalism as well that involves, isn't there?
An unwillingness to think differently, I think, would be fair, which for as a nation of inventors and all that in the past is just interesting. It will be interesting to see. We are increasingly having a lot of players going overseas, if that's going to influence it. You look at Liam Henderson, you look at even Ollie Burke's been in Germany and now in Spain. Yeah. Is that going to have an impact or not? Yeah. Who knows? Just in terms of, I can speak for a completely different field that I work in. I went and obviously lived in Australia for a couple of years, and just being somewhere different, you think about things differently. You obviously do, because you're immersed in a different culture.
You're forced to.
It's definitely helped me in my career in terms of how I think about things. It may have affected my life negatively in other ways, who knows? But it does change, and I think just having that mix, because it can be helpful as well having a team of players who grow up in Scotland, go and play in England. That's their life. They don't think about anything else. There needs to be a mix of characters. Maybe that's the point we're trying to make here, as I try and labour this whole thing. There needs to be a mix of characters. Do we have a mix of characters? Do we really have players that are that different to each other?
But there's also an element that there's a part of the Scottish psyche, as we were saying, that loves this wallowing in defeat and you know, you can see that the tabloids would much rather we get thumped, then we lose narrowly and stuff like that. And that's
the process of England, so.
Oh yeah, no, I think that exists as well. But England are changing that in terms of their creating a tunnel vision. We're still susceptible to that.
I think that's, I'd argue the same thing happens to England. It's just at a different level because they're better overall.
Yeah.
And when they get to a quarter final, they have this exact same thing that we have.
When their papers go to Lally, yeah, they're going to win.
They're a football rich country with a history that's got 59 people.
And okay, yeah, they're doing things differently in some ways, but I think
they've underachieved as well. They've not won. So we're not that bad.
Everyone's fine. Right, so ending on a positive. Everyone's fine. Fuck England. Right, thank you very much, Duncan. Thank you very much, Craig.
Sorry, I feel like I did a lot of heavy lifting.
I
like to get off my chest there. If you can make anything coherent out of it, then...
You're the biggest Scotland fan at three of us. It was only fitting you'd done heavy lifting.
Well, especially after the kind of travails I had actually getting here. It was quite...
exactly, it was worth the wait.
Yeah, I think it fired me up.
Right, if you'd like to listen to more of us, we'll be on the Patreon, patreon.com/ Terrace Podcast, as little as $2 a month. You can get more extra content if you want, even more content on top of that, as I struggle to say content. That is $5 a month. You can also find on Twitter, Facebook, etc. Guys, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Cheerio.
Bye. We'd like to conclude this episode by passing on our love to long-time Terrace supporter and listener Fraser. All our thoughts are with you and your family at this time.
Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.